those of others. This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom with help from Roger Newton in physics. For A Moment of Science, I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports this afternoon, the NCAA has placed Alabama's football program and 15 other of the school's athletic teams on 3 years probation for major violations due to misuse of free textbooks. The NCAA's Committee on Infractions says the football team must forfeit an unspecified number of wins in which any of seven players took part during 2005 to 2007. The university identified the seven as intentional wrongdoers. The NCAA said that 201 student-athletes in the 16 sports, including men's basketball, obtained impermissible benefits by using their scholarships to obtain free textbooks for other students. The university was ordered to pay a fine of $43,900. Pinch hitter Colby Rasmus hit a go-ahead single in the eighth inning after a costly error by center fielder Cody Ross, sending the St. Louis Cardinals over the Florida Marlins 6-5 this afternoon in Miami. The Cardinals rallied for three runs in the eighth. The Chicago Cubs are in Houston tonight to take on the Astros. Last night, Jeff Blum singled in the winning run with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth to lift the Astros to a 2-1 win over the Cubs. Carlos Zambrano followed a run on three hits through eight innings. And the Detroit Tigers and the Chicago White Sox wrap up their five-game series tonight at U.S. Cellular Field in Chicago. Last night, Justin Verlander outpitched John Danks as the Tigers beat the Sox 2-1. That's sports.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. Dedicated to preserving our planet, the Subaru Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, achieved zero landfill status with nothing from its manufacturing efforts going into a landfill. It's part of what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Information at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert has taken his television show, The Colbert Report, a parody of a conservative talk show, to Baghdad to entertain U.S. soldiers. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports.
All week, American soldiers have been crowding into an old palace hall on the U.S. military base near Baghdad Airport to catch The Colbert Report. The comedian warmed up the audience with some banter before the show, wearing a camouflage suit. He even put on some harmony as a soldier sang the Star Spangled Banner. And the rockets ran loud. Most of the troops know by now that Colbert is a large donor to several charities for wounded veterans and their families. And during the first show in the series, he did something to prove his commitment. By video link from Washington, President Barack Obama ordered the commander of U.S. forces in Iraq, General Ray Odierno, to shave off Colbert's perfect anchorman's hairdo. Colbert spent the rest of the week's broadcast with a crew cut. In the audience, Navy Commander Otto Lee said he's a longtime fan.
Oh, I think it's great that he's out here to help cheer up our troops here. It's humor. It's a very powerful tool to get people's attention. And I think sometimes with the economy in the States, where the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is taking the backseat in a lot of the news reporting.
Some of the troops took a bit of persuading to like Colbert. While his stage character is a parody of a right-wing conservative, it's understood that his real politics swing in the opposite direction. Colbert may be most famous for an excoriating roast he gave of then-President George W. Bush at the White House Foreign Correspondents' Dinner. But John Hansen of the USO says there was no hesitation to bring Colbert to Iraq.
If you look at some of the old Bob Hope routines, he jokes about people, he'll say, "Bet you thought you guys were going home by now," that kind of thing. We've brought Al Franken, we brought Robin Williams. On the other side, we brought Wayne Newton and Drew Carey, and none of them talk about politics. They're here to entertain the troops, and they all do that.
Colbert's ridiculous stage character often disarms his guests before posing very serious questions. Last night's first interviewee was Deputy Prime Minister of Iraq, Barham Saleh. Colbert asked him about progress toward democracy.
We are making progress and we are moving along thanks to the help of this wonderful U.S. military who have come from afar to help us and give us a chance to build in a decent nation here.
How hard Please, sir. Let me tell you how this works. I do the pandering. Okay.
Saleh protested that he meant what he said, though he's one of the few members of the Iraqi government who will publicly thank American troops for being in Iraq. Saleh is from Iraq's ethnic Kurdish minority, which strongly supports the American occupation from their autonomous region in the north of the country. Colbert asked Saleh a pointed question.
No, sir, you're a Kurd.
Mm-hmm.
And you once advocated for a separate Kurdish state.
Mm-hmm.
Why is a united Iraq the best answer now?
Well, life is not about perfect solutions. Perhaps every Kurd would like to see an independent Kurdistan still, but we all have accepted, Kurds, Arabs, Shias and Sunnis, that a democratic Iraq will provide all of these communities of Iraq with or most of what they need.
So you're kind of like Texas. You'd like to be your own state,
absolutely.
But you see the reality
on
the ground.
That's a good one. Yeah, indeed.
The next guest was the head of ground operations in Iraq, Lieutenant General Charles Jacoby. Again, Colbert demonstrated the growing power and influence of news parody. It was a rare instance where General Jacoby spoke to a journalist, or at least someone who plays a journalist on TV. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, Baghdad.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Rita Schulte is with me this afternoon here in Studio C. She's our membership director, and she's here because we're approaching the end of our fiscal year, and we've got about 2 weeks and change to make our goal for the year, for this fiscal year, that it's about to end on June 30th. And so everything that's in the bank at the end of this month, that's what pays for next year's program.
That's what we will have to use to basically supplement the, and in this case, probably make the lion's share of our budget, along with some federal and state and university support. And we are so close, Celeste. We have got about $265,000 left to go. Now, that sounds like a really ginormous piece of change. But we were thinking the other day, if everybody works hard and helps to do what they can and digs a little deep, we can do this. It took 21,000 contributions to get as far as we have. Donors have given us $1.8 million to bring you programs like Afternoon Magazine, Focus 580, The World Coming Up, these wonderful snippets of life on the planet that you've just enjoyed, plus the great interview with Sue today from the Natural
History Survey,
right, talking about local gems in our area. That all is paid for by the Friends of WILL, and we are asking you to help us close the gap so we can pay for just a little bit more with your pledge call today. So far, we've heard from 78 folks who are willing to step up and make a contribution. The number to call is 217-244-9455. Make that gift of $52 or $40. Our tent is really big, Celeste. We've got donors who give us $25 and $1,000 and more. You can be one of those too. 217-244-9455. Call today and show your support.
And when we call in and make a pledge, how does it work? What do they ask us? For those who have never done it before.
Well, okay. We'll step you through. First thing, we'll ask you, what station are you listening to? The second thing, how much would you like to pledge? The third thing, how would you like to pay that pledge? The fourth thing, your name and your address, maybe your phone number so we can make sure that if your name is a little bit like somebody else's, we get the right you.
Okay.
If you would like a confirmation of your pledge by email, we'll ask for your email address. We'll ask you if you would like, if you're making a contribution of $60 or more, if you'd like a tote bag. Maybe if you're making a pledge of $40 or more, if you'd like a member card, two for $75. Lots of little questions like that. And if you don't want any more than just your name and address so we can give you a tax receipt and a thank you, perfectly fine.
Okay. And then we say thank you so much for your support.
Again and again until you say please enough.
And we send you off on your way.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. 244-9455. We also have a secure website where you can pledge, and that's willpledge.org. Well, your reading this summer may involve brushing the sand off page 5 or firing up your Kindle. However you do it, NPR's Susan Stamberg has some reading suggestions for you straight from some independent booksellers.
Memory, marriage, mandrake roots. The summer reading themes are heavily into the M's. Oh, and maps, which are at the heart of a book Rhona Brinley loves. She owns the Bookmark in Atlantic Beach, Florida. The novel is called The Selected Works of T.S. Spivet by Rafe Larson. Rhona says it's about a boy in Montana who makes maps of everything.
He maps your face, he maps your feet, he maps your dinner table.
Intricate little drawings, and then he makes up stories about what he's mapped. Somebody sends the maps to the Smithsonian, which invites the map maker to be keynote speaker at their big 150th anniversary gala.
Having absolutely no idea that he's 12 years old. And he keeps talking about Gracie, who is his sister, and they say, oh, of course, your lovely wife is welcome to come with you.
And off he goes. And The Selected Works of T.S. Spivet is all about the characters he meets en route. A great and funny adventure tale, says Rhona. Memory is the theme in another Rhona summer pick, The Housekeeper and the Professor by Yoko Ogawa, set in Japan.
The professor has had an accident in 1975, and he can't remember anything after that time except in 80-minute loops.
So every morning, the housekeeper must reintroduce herself to him. Here's a scene in which she meets the professor, mathematics is his specialty, for the very first time.
I was not surprised to find balls of hair and moldy popsicle sticks behind the desk, or a chicken bone resting on top of one of his bookshelves. And yet the room was filled by a kind of stillness, not simply an absence of noise, but an accumulation of layers of silence, untouched by fallen hair or mold. Silence that the professor left behind as he wandered through the numbers.
From The Housekeeper and the Professor by Yoko Ogawa. Rhona Brinley's last summer choice is all about food, yet has nothing to do with food. Erica Bauermeiter's novel, The School of Essential Ingredients, is set in a cooking school run by a woman who thinks that how you cook is more important than what you cook.
And she has this theory, for instance, that couples before they get married should cook their wedding cake together, and that many of them would not get married after that.
The School of Essential Ingredients has no recipes, but Rhona Brinley says it's full of delicious characters.
I always judge characters by would you want to have lunch with them, and these characters all would be people who are slightly flawed. That would be wonderful, and the food would be good, I'm thinking.
Ingredients in a summer suggestion from Chris Livingston at the Bookshelf in Winona, Minnesota, could kill you. That is, if you foolishly chose to eat anything in Amy Stewart's Wicked Plants, a book of botanical atrocities. It's a brief lexicon of plants that can be really scary.
Destructive, painful, offensive, dangerous, and even deadly.
So that prettily named mandrake root, fans of Harry Potter know the name, can be a real screamer. Chris Livingston also likes a memoir called The Late Homecomer by poet Kaukelya Yang.
This is really a story about a people that don't have a homeland. Where do they call home?
Kaukelya Yang was 5 when her family fled Laos toward the end of the war in Vietnam. She grew up in St. Paul, in the Hmong community there, and felt caught between two cultures.
My mother and father told us not to look at the Americans. If we saw them, they would see us. For the first year and a half, we wanted to be invisible. Everywhere we went beyond the McDonough Housing Project, we were looked at and we felt exposed. We were dealing with a widespread realization that all Hmong people must do one of two things to survive in America, grow up or grow old.
From The Late Homecomer, a memoir by Kaukelya Yang, read for us by Chris Livingston at the Bookshelf in Winona, Minnesota. Lucia Silva, buyer for Portrait of a Bookstore in Studio City, California, says Kevin Wilson's miscellany, Tunneling to the Center of the Earth, is for people who don't like short stories.
They maybe feel like there's not enough meat to hold on to or that the characters don't develop far enough.
But Kevin Wilson's stories are full of intrigue and tweaked realities. For instance, an older woman, never married, answers a grandma wanted ad. She ends up working as a rent-a-grandma for 5 different families until she quits in despair. Another Kevin Wilson story is narrated by a sorter in a Scrabble factory.
Collecting cues.
The letter cues, tiles with the letter Q?
Yes.
All the sorters have to wade knee-deep into the tiles to find their assigned letters. Odd things happen. Lucia reads an excerpt.
At the end of work today, the quitting bell rings and we line up. I noticed the M woman still on her hands and knees, her face streaked red from crying. When I walk over to her, she holds up a handful of tiles. All W's. They look the same, Leonard, she tells me, almost pleading. I mean, if you didn't look too closely. She spent the entire day picking up the wrong letter.
From a story in Kevin Wilson's collection, Tunneling to the Center of the Earth. Uruguayan writer Eduardo Galeano's book, Mirrors, translated by Mark Fried, has a subtitle, Stories of Almost Everyone. And Lucia Silva says the book has enormous scope.
Everything from Greek mythology to Fidel Castro to the Berlin Wall to Mark Twain, Django Reinhardt. They're little vignettes formed in almost like a browser's dictionary in vaguely chronological order.
The vignettes are lyrically written, Lucia thinks, and Galeano seems to have a mission in writing them.
The untold stories of the people on the margins of history, of people and places that have long been ignored.
Why does he call it mirrors?
Well, there's a great quote. Mirrors are full of people. The invisible see us. The forgotten recall us. When we see ourselves, we see them. When we turn away, do they?
And then what remains? Eduardo Galeano offers some answers in Mirrors, Stories of Almost Everyone. And that subtitle could describe all of this year's summer reading picks from our always independent booksellers. Happy reading, everybody. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
Earth and Sky.
Antidepressants may benefit people, but they're not much help to fish. That's according to Melissa Schultz, an environmental chemist at the College of Worcester in Ohio. She said that antidepressants and other medications we excrete and flush down the toilet are winding up in rivers, possibly harming wildlife.
We are just really beginning to understand how these chemicals do affect fish.
Schultz teamed up with biologists who exposed a group of farm-raised minnows to trace levels of antidepressants, in particular to a drug known as Effexor, and then analyzed the results.
At low levels, the levels that we are seeing in the environment, it can affect the young fish so they can't respond as fast to stimuli. And what that can translate to in the environment is, you know, perhaps a predator could come upon them and they're not going to be able to react as fast, and basically they're going to end up being someone's lunch.
Schultz thinks we can prevent this problem where it starts, in our toilets.
Maybe 10 years from now, it'll become commonplace. If you know you're taking certain pharmaceuticals, you might have some sort of filter in your toilet so that they're removed before that water even goes to the wastewater treatment plant.
In the meantime, people can help preserve water quality by throwing unused medications in the trash instead of flushing them. I'm Joel.